Thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name, and we're still here.
What's up, Newer Sens listeners? This is your boy Brennan, joined by Dave and Nick here, my podcast co-hosts. We're on episode 18 already, and we've got a special guest coming up for you in Jason Greger, who's from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. So kind of a bit of a fitting guest now that Ottawa and Edmonton have started their two games against each other. Pretty wild start for the first period of the first game. So how are you boys doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I just want to give a shout out real quick to Belly Up Sports, who have taken us on, taken on our podcast on their network, and Belly Up Sports Podcast. The guys over there have done a really good job. They have a lot of good podcasts on the go there, so we're really happy to be joining their team. But besides that, man, everything is great. Nick, how you doing, buddy?
Let me just tell you, I'm watching the second period now. I'm not feeling too good about the start, but I'm doing well regardless. I think I'm just trying to be as positive as I can be so far, but it's really hard, I think, for the most part.
After the first period, Brendan dropped $20 on the Ottawa Senators to win. So he told me this before recording, and he's like, "Oh, it pays out like $140." And I said, in my mind, I was like, I never would have done that, but that's cool, Brendan.
I like those risky bets, although it looked like they were coming on as of late. Penalties are definitely killing us today, but it's 6-3. Who knows? It could be a good 10-9 game or something crazy. It's we're used to having at least 5 goals scored on us, it seems like, in the last 2 weeks of the games that we've played. It seems like almost every single one of them has been that way. I'm just happy we've got 3. So, you know what? It's as good as any bet I throw on Ottawa at this point.
And you know what, Dave? You want to tell the people how much you made last time you bet on ProLine? I think that's pretty cool. I think you should mention that.
My last ProLine on Thursday made $2,570. And then my ProLine before that was $470. So I've lost $30, but I'm up over $3,000. And yeah. By no means does that make me an expert. It's been a little bit of luck with a lot of homework. So.
Yeah, I think we should post, you know, every day, Dave's picks for the day. You know, we might make people some money. So why not? Let's give it a go.
You know what, man? As of this Thursday, I will every Thursday for 4 weeks, I will do Dave's picks. And we'll see how it goes.
All right.
Might be dabbling in some gambling laws and things like that. We'll fire it up. We'll just say Dave's picks for rhetorical things, not gambling related. We are not telling anyone to place money on anything. We're just saying that these people or player teams might have good game on that day.
But if you do, our sense gets half.
That's tempting.
This. All right, so getting into today's game, since we're just at the end of the first period of the it's currently 6-3 Edmonton over Ottawa, and I just want to know, how's everyone feeling with the team right now? We're in a rough go with being 1-6-1 to start the year, and I'm just curious what your guys' thoughts are. It seems like we're just Groundhog Day is in a couple days, and it just seems like we're in that Groundhog Day movie, because it just seems to be the same thing happening over and over again, where we're the little brothers getting our absolute asses fed.
So the last time Ottawa's record was this bad to start a season was the last time we came out with a 2-day jersey, right? So at the birth of the Senators, that's the last time we played this bad. I do think we have a lot way better pieces than we did back then, of course. I also think that everybody's playing a little bit scared. Everyone's a little scared to go down to the taxi squad. Everyone has, you know, I think what happened is a lot of people are like, yeah, no expectations. And because everybody said they're going to suck and have no expectations, they kind of took it upon themselves to be like, yeah, well, we're going to try and prove you wrong. And now they're kind of putting too much pressure on themselves, right? You could tell, like, when you saw Brady Tkachuk score earlier, he looked miserable. Like, they're not having fun anymore. Nikki, what do you think?
Yeah, well, see, that's my biggest concern is that I'm sort of scared about these young players and what, you know, it's hard to buy into this team for these young guys, in my opinion, anyway. Like, how are you supposed to want to be a part of this team long term? And just knowing that you're constantly losing and it's not a good feeling. Look at a guy like Brady Tkachuk, who's supposed to re-sign with us. Obviously, he didn't celebrate on the first goal, doesn't seem happy. And obviously, contract talks haven't started yet. So I am worried, and I think that's my biggest concern so far. But I do still have hope. I mean, as a Sens fan, I think you need hope if you've gone through what they've gone through. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm not pleased. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to be pleased right now as a Sens fan. I think there's a lot of hype coming into this year, obviously, like just with the new jerseys, all the signs and everything that came in. I think in all honesty, though, like we just have to be realistic and remember that we are in a rebuild. With our interview that the listeners will hear later, we talked with Greggs and he brought up a lot of comparisons between based out of Edmonton. So he brought up a lot of comparisons between the Sens now and what Edmonton was a few years ago. And I mean, I absolutely hate to hear that, but in all honesty, we're going on what 3 years now where we're in the like bottom of the standings in the NHL. And with that being said, as rough as it is, it is those growing pains. And he brought up a good point where he said, what competitive team has a line of three guys that are under the age of 22 years old in their top six? Like our top line right now with Norris, Batherson and Tkachuk. I've been impressed with those guys play. But in all honesty, it just like when they're going up every single night against like an Elias Pettersson or like a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews, like this division is so tough. Like the North is so hard. And for me, it's like, okay, as much as it's like, okay, we're making steps in the right direction. It's like a big part of what needs to happen is these kids need to play games and they need to get better and they need to get accustomed to playing in the NHL. And unfortunately that's going to be ugly. Like until we get to a point where they're comfortable and playing really well. I think Brady Tkachuk has been a standout player. Like I've been fired right up, but yeah. Been tough.
See, I would have been happy with that, knowing that the roster spots that have been taken away from some of our young players were at least filled with some decent vets. And like, as of yet, the veterans that Pierre Dorion brought have been the ones who are making the mistakes, which is exactly what I'm upset and don't like seeing is they're not giving a chance to all of these young guys. And I didn't really expect them to, but the decision to bring in all these guys to at least make them competitive hasn't really paid off. And I think that's what I'm sort of pissed at. Just knowing that our younger guys, you know, are getting outplayed, getting their minutes diminished because of these older players who aren't necessarily good at all. So that's just my takeaway on it.
Just a heads up, Oilers scored again. It's now 7-3.
Nice.
Which gives Connor McDavid 5 points on the night. The man's already got 22 points, I think, or 21 or 22 points on the season.
Man, I saw a tweet today. It said that McDavid had 13 points in his last 13 periods of hockey. That was from Greggs, actually. But so now that's probably up to what, 15 points in his last 13 periods of hockey. Man, that guy's a cheat code. Like watching him skate down the ice, the way he moves so quickly, like with his feet, his stick, everything that he's able to do, like. I mean, I guess we get into this. So with that comparison that Greg's brought up of Ottawa and the Oilers, how do you feel the Sens roster now looks in comparison to like what Edmonton was a few years ago? Do you feel like it is a similar situation? Do you think that is a real like comparable like scale?
I look at it and I go, we've made some of the same stupid moves. Like they got rid of Hall for pretty much nothing. You know, Ottawa got rid of Mark Stone, which is kind of what I look at it as, right? Like, I mean, we got a bit more for Stone than they did for Hall, but at the end of the day, yeah, I think we're a young team. They had a whole basket full of first-round picks that they ended up having on the roster, and it was young guys making young mistakes, and they just couldn't, you know, they just couldn't win. You had older guys at the beginning of it, like Smith and stuff, like Ryan Smith, who kind of tried to do as much as he can to carry the team, say with like Horkoff, and it just never worked out. So I think at the end of the day, Ottawa, I think, is in a bit of a better position. I think they have better leadership on the team, like some of the young guys, like Tkachuk and Chabot. So some of the young leadership that we have now is better than they had when they first started. Like the guys like Hall and McDavid, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess I sort of agree with that. At the same time, I do think they had a bit more talent than what we do, and I think that's something we're really lacking right now. I mean, we do have some really skilled forwards, but no guys, maybe besides Stützle and Batherson, that are like over the top skilled who can really put the puck in the net.
You don't have a Connor McDavid.
Yeah, exactly. So
no one's got Connor McDavid.
It's different for sure. But what I'm curious is to see how they choose to exit this rebuild. Is it going to be anything similar to what Edmonton has been doing? Maybe we get lucky and we get a guy, we get the first pick next year or the year after, and that finally puts us over the edge. But we'll see. I mean, McDavid is a game changer. We talked about that. So it's definitely different.
Yeah, I think like I love what Ottawa is doing. I think that the way that they're building their team is great. Like, I think having Brady Tkachuk is such a valuable piece, and Tim Stützle obviously is just so skilled, and like Chabot should be that cornerstone defenseman that they're building around, and Jake Sanderson. I think that he has the ability to be even more effective than Chabot potentially. But I think, like, for me, the difference is that Ottawa just has the depth in prospects, which I don't think Edmonton ever really had. Like, I think Edmonton had a lot of high skill guys, but I don't think that they ever really had like those guys that could go out and play those like third or fourth line minutes that are prospects, or just the depth. I think that like that's just the thing, that when you look at Ottawa's cupboards, they're just so packed. So that's what I think like will separate us and like kind of strengthens our chance of having success sooner. But yeah, it definitely is tough to see just where we are in the standings. Do you guys think that if Ottawa wasn't playing in the North Division this year, our record might look a little different? Do you think that potentially our team could be doing better? I mean, there's been a lot of talk how this is one of the more competitive divisions in the league right now. If they're in their typical division with like Buffalo and Detroit, do you think that they might be doing a little better?
I think they may have snuck in an extra win, maybe two. I don't think they'd be doing much better, but I think they have a couple more wins under their belt, and maybe with that comes a bit more confidence, and with a bit more confidence, maybe, you know, closer games or losing a couple more in overtime or in a shootout, or, you know, maybe scaling that one extra point out in overtime, who knows. But I think in a regular season, yeah, I think they'd be doing a little bit better.
Yeah, you know, see, I definitely do think that they would be doing better if it was a situation like last year and every other year, just because I think some teams are weaker against others and other teams are stronger against like certain teams. And I think if you look at the teams that are in the Canadian division, they're all playoff teams. If you look at it in a realistical way, they're all supposed to be in the playoffs in any year. I think they're all competing to actually go far in the playoffs. If you look at Montreal, Toronto, Edmonton, even Vancouver, for me, Calgary, these are all teams that should at least, you know, they have pressure to do something. And when you put a team like Ottawa in a division that's so strong, well, obviously it's not going to be pretty. But if you have them play teams like LA, Anaheim, New York, whatever, I mean, I do think that some confidence would have come from that, and that the team would be at least a bit better than, you know, just.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get what you guys are saying, but I actually, I disagree a bit. I don't think Ottawa would be doing much better. I think like, yeah, maybe they would have a win, or there might be a couple closer games, but I think that like this team has honestly looked worse than they did last year. And that's like the, on paper, this team, in my opinion, is significantly improved. I think that I like them a lot more. There's like, these kids are coming in, they have a chance to play, but for whatever reason, like just in a lot of these games, I just felt like they've had so many breakdowns and so many things fall apart. And maybe it is because they're playing against tough competition. I know that game, that Vancouver game that they played the other night where they had 23 or 24 shots in the first period. Like, they looked phenomenal, but they just haven't been able to play a full 60 minutes, which is something that like the Leafs really struggled with back in the day before they were able to be competitive. And I don't know. I think that they're just really facing some adversity right now. And like, it might be because it's different competition, but like, I look at the division that they were in before and like Florida is like what, almost undefeated to start the year. I think they have 5 straight wins. Mm-hmm. And then Buffalo is much improved with Taylor Hall. Like, they look solid. They might not have a ton of wins, but they look better. I mean, Detroit's still Detroit, but like, we might squeak out like 1 or 2 more wins, but that's about it for me.
Yeah. And see, one of the things is you could say Ottawa might be doing better if it was in a regular NHL season. At the end of the day, they're making a lot of mistakes with the puck. They're, you know, some bad young passes. Mistakes. Yeah. Young mistakes, you know, some bad passes, some, well, no, they are, man. The kids are making some bad passes. The other game, you watched the Chuck passes to nobody, ended up on a Canuck stick, right? And it was just like, why? I think they're playing scared because of to go on the taxi squad. Guys like Tkachuk shouldn't be afraid to do that, but he might be afraid to lose, you know, one of his buddies that's playing with him. Who knows? But at the end of the day, those mistakes are made by the players, you know, so it doesn't matter which team you're playing against, whether it be Florida or Tampa Bay or Edmonton. Those mistakes are made by the players, not by the other team.
I think it's also, part of it is because they're young, but also it's a new team and there's like no chemistry. We haven't had like any exhibition games, so this is pretty much it. Other teams have, you know, played together for some time now. Look at Toronto. I mean, they did change, but the core is still there. They've brought back a lot of these same players, but Ottawa is much younger. I think the whole team is you know, a roster overhaul. So I do think that just because we're young, it doesn't really have to do with much. I think it's more in the sense that we're a young team in the sense that they haven't really gelled together yet. That would be my thing. But I do expect them to at least find their groove and get a few wins, and that would make me happy.
Yeah, man. Let's St. Louis Blues this and go win the Cup, boys.
I know. I was thinking that actually. Like, I saw Montreal's off to a crazy start. Like, they haven't lost regulation yet. And I was like, well, I remember a couple years ago.
They lost to Calgary in regulation.
Okay. Right. I missed it. I forgot. That was last night, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just reminded me of when they went 10-0 to start the year and then they still missed the playoffs. Like, that's hockey can be a streaky game. And like, that happened with Philly a few years ago where they won like 10 or they lost 10 straight and then they went and won 10 straight. So it's one of those things. Like, anything could happen. I agree with you, Nick. Like, this is a new team. There's a lot of guys who haven't played together. There's also a lot of guys that I feel like aren't stepping up or playing as well as they should be. Like, I love Thomas Chabot. He's one of my favorite players, like, especially because I'm a Sens fan. I haven't been impressed with him. He has looked rough. And I don't know if it's because he's trying to do too much or if he just really feels the pressure on him. Maybe he's not being paired with the right guys. But I don't think he's had the best start to the year. I'm sure he's feeling that way too. One guy I have been pumped with, and I am so happy he's back in the lineup, and he is back with a hunger. This kid wants to eat. Colin White just scored his goal of the year. The monkey's off his back. This time he didn't hit it in with his head. He actually used a stick, even though he probably could have with how high the puck was. Let's go. He looked great.
I mean, he's not baby, but give that man a steak. He's earned it.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, he's a little rusty, and I'm really surprised they haven't put Colin White on that first line and dropped Norris to the second line. They really should, and I understand the chemistry between Norris and Batherson and then Norris and Tkachuk, but at the end of the day, Colin White's going to have chemistry with both those guys. He knows Tkachuk. He's been around. If I'm not wrong, Colin White's our longest active player, right? So, I mean, have him play with Tkachuk. Have him play with Batherson. I honestly think that would be a pretty good line. Give him a few games. Don't just, you know, he's playing scared. And he scored tonight, and he's looking good. And I don't think he's going back to the taxi squad. And I think they should give him a bigger responsibility.
If he did, then there would be a huge problem if he did get sent down again. Just for the fans, I think the fans would just riot. But also, it wouldn't really make sense if you brought a guy down like that, but he kept playing guys like Paquette and whoever else is doing all these mistakes. But I think Colin White deserves to be in this lineup. He's obviously a core piece for a team. And It just feels wrong to have sent him down for the start of the year because he is playing really well. So I guess that's a positive thing to just see Colin White at least get his game back and going. And we'll see what the line combinations, they'll change every game. So I wonder who he'll play with. But what I've seen so far is Stützle and Batherson get some time together. And I really hope those two stick. I think they complement each other really well. So it'd be cool.
I like that. I like that a lot. And Drake can speak German to him too when they're on the ice. So
there you go.
Better, you can get yelling at him. I kind of like the Colin White and Dadonov combination. And the reason for that for me is that Dadonov has been underwhelming in my opinion. Like I think the big thing with Dadonov is he is a scorer and he's a finisher, but he's not a play driver. And now he's put into this situation where all of a sudden you're the guy. Like Dadonov is our offensive guy. Like probably up there as one of the highest in terms of being a veteran and like supposed to be like a reliable scorer, where he's coming off of a Panthers team where like he's had Barkov and Huberto, Hoffman as well. So like that pressure was there, but it wasn't as much. So I feel like now he's kind of forced into this big thing. And I think White and him have been gelling decently well. I've been like kind of impressed with their play, and I'm hoping that maybe White can kind of be the guy who gets Dadonov going a little bit, just because it does look like they're clicking pretty good. But I agree. I think that Jimmy Stew's going to look great switching it up a bit in some of those lines. I'd love to see Galchenyuk get a bigger role too and a chance in an offensive, like a top six role, just to see, because why not at this point?
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. So I guess moving on from that, who has been your guys' standouts and your disappointment so far this year?
Matt Murray. I'm sorry, man. I said it before, okay? We brought him in knowing what the team is going to be, and we brought him in to be the goalie that can steal games, that can make incredible saves when needed. You know, he needs to stand on his head a bit more, and he hasn't done any of that. He has not earned a buck of his contract. That being said, he's had really bad defense.
Yeah.
Really bad defense. And you know what? At the end of the day, he does not trust his defense, and his defense doesn't trust him. And that is an issue. You can see it. He's cheating because you catch him cheating all the time because he doesn't trust his defense. And then defense is getting in his vision a lot. Like, I don't know if you've noticed that. I've watched a few goals in the last three games where guys are constantly in his way. And it's like, you're supposed to be clearing guys from this path. You're not supposed to be getting in his way.
Mm-hmm. I saw a tweet tonight that said Josh Brown might play 20 minutes of ice time, and he should, because he is the most competent sense D.
Really?
In his own end. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not a huge Josh Brown fan, but I also don't know who's been good in our own end. Like, it has been so rough. There's times when guys look decent, but I mean, like, Mike Riley, I don't think should be in the NHL at this point. Like,
nope. Free Brännström.
Free Brännström, man. Why don't they give him a shot at this point? Like, okay, yeah, maybe he's not the best defensively, but he can't be any worse than some of these guys that are getting thrown in. Like, I don't know. Like, it's been atrocious watching.
Logan Brown too.
I think after this game, there's got to be some changes. And if you do choose to waive some guys, what team is going to pick up any of these guys we're waiving? Probably none. So the risk is really low. And I think the reward could be really high if you bring in guys like Brännström, Logan Brown, Formanton, Abramov, all these guys who at least deserve a chance in the lineup. And what do you have to lose? You've already hit like rock bottom. At this point, just go young and just fucking, sorry for my language, but just bring all these guys who deserve to play, who have been sitting in a hotel room and just training. Come on. You can't just keep watching this team and do nothing about it. That's just my rant.
I love the passion word, Nick.
Do it. Don't bring up your thought just to sensitize our viewers. Yeah, right. Earmuffs, kids. Earmuffs. I completely agree. It's one of those things where it's like, at this point, you got to start making some drastic moves. I truly think that Dorion was trying to replicate what he did last year, where he brought in some 1-year contracts or just brought in some pieces, and then he was going to try to flip them again at the deadline. I think that's what his hope was. I think he was thinking like, okay, well, we can have like a Derek Stepan, and maybe Stepan looks great in a second line role. And then come the deadline, we can flip him for a second round pick or a first round pick. Like, I think that was kind of in Alex Galchenyuk in that role, if they weren't competing, I think that might've been a similar thought process to like what they did with the Mystikov and Ennis and those guys previously. Obviously like they were able to fetch a big return for a lot of guys, JG Pageau. But I think that this year that's not working. Like, these guys are not gelling with the team. They might be character guys, but they're not doing well, and it's been tough.
Yeah.
It's been a tough week, man. It's been a tough season so far. So,
Yeah. So a couple things here. So we're getting to the point where we're going to wrap up, but I guess we kind of just wanted to touch a bit on the news that's going on there in the league, because there's a couple things that have come to light. The first thing that I just saw as of right now is that apparently Nathan MacKinnon is has a lower body injury. He's not returning to tonight's game. So this might be something that passes in a couple of days. He's fine. But anytime you see a guy of his caliber injured in any capacity, that's tough, especially for fans of the game, especially because Colorado is arguably the best team in the league this year, in my opinion. But tough to see that. We'll have some news coming up.
Also, Edmonton scored again.
That's great. I love it. That's why I'm not watching the game anymore.
As for Nathan MacKinnon, yeah, that sucks, man. You hate to see one of the best. I'm going to say one of the best in the world. He's definitely one of the best guys in the world, all-around hockey player. And from my understanding, just an overall good person. You hate to see him go down. He's such a good player. He's such a freak show to watch play, man. So, I mean, yeah, that sucks.
Other thing that we'll touch on just real quick. We don't want to be a political podcast, but Tony DeAngelo has been waived by the New York Rangers, which is – I mean, I don't want to say it's surprising, because it's probably not surprising, given things that have come out. But it is, it still must be a bit tough for them, given that he is honestly probably one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. I'm curious, Nick and Dave, if you think that a team's going to take a chance on Tony and pick him up off waivers.
Oh yeah, someone's gonna let the heat ride for about a week, let it cool down, wait for the next big thing to come out news wise, and then someone's gonna pick him up. That's what I think.
Oh, I really don't think he will get picked up. I mean, he's been bouncing around a few teams before arriving in New York, and I think he's been given like a lot of chances so far, and nothing has really paid off. I mean, look, he's still a cancer in the locker room, if you want to put it that way. So my best bet is that a team in Russia is going to give him a nice deal, and he'll accept that, and he'll be gone. But I don't really see him getting picked up.
Really quick, shout out to Derek Lee. He just tweeted, Leon Draisaitl has more points in this game than any Ottawa Senator has this year so far.
Love that.
Sad fact.
I mean, at least maybe his German counterpart could learn a thing or two in Stutzel. But good God, boys. I know, I was looking at that coming into the game, and it showed like the point leaders. I think it was posted on our Instagram, and it was like McDavid with like 17 points. And then we had Josh Norris with 5. And I was like, good fucking God. Like,
oh, man. But Leon Draisaitl has 6 assists this game. 6.
Impressive.
Connor McDavid has a goal and 4 assists. Like, that's disgusting. That's, man. Well,
since Edmonton's having such a great time, why don't we leave the podcast here? We'll cut over to our interview with Greggs, where he has some hot takes on the Sens for listeners. So just know that our opinions might not be 100% associated with his, but nonetheless, it's interesting to hear it from an Edmonton fan. Unreal guy, great guest. We get into a bit about mental health, something that we're all big on. So. Enjoy the podcast, or enjoy the interview, everyone, and take care.
Hey, everybody, what's up? It's your boy Dave from NewEraSense.com. With me today is our friend Brennan. We have a really special interview for you guys in light of the Edmonton and Ottawa series coming up that's going to start. We have TSN 1260's own Jason Gregor. Gregor, how's it going?
Pretty good, boys. How you doing?
Good. Good, man.
Senators and Nordiques. It's a unique mix. I like it.
I just, I mean, I wish the rivalry could come back, but unfortunately, it's not there. So it's a little easier watching Colorado this year than Ottawa, but still a diehard Sens fan.
Hey, that's all right, man. I would love to see the Nordiques back. That's one of the best jerseys. Hey, if Winnipeg can come back, who knows? Maybe Quebec can too.
It was such a short-lived stint that they had in Quebec too, really, if you look over the time. And a lot of good relevers. I'm sure everyone there would love to see them come back. They got a new rank too, so who knows. I took this from my dad, so
really cool thing for me is we've interviewed some pretty big guys, right? It's guys that we don't like associate with or know very well. So for me, this is really cool because I listen to you and Strutty every day on my way home from work.
Oh, nice.
And every day. And I've been listening to Dusty in the mornings every morning on my way to work. You know, I'm part of both crews there. So for me, this is really cool that I get to talk to the guy that I get a lot of my information from every day on my way home in the worst traffic possible on the yellow. So to me, this is awesome. Strutty's a little crazy. We can all admit that.
He's a beauty.
So Brendan, they have this segment. It's called Struds On, okay? And every day, and it is literally him ranting about different stuff every day. And sometimes it's like the weirdest stuff, and sometimes it is the stuff that you're like, man, he's absolutely right. It drives me nuts.
So that sounds like the perfect guy for radio.
His chapstick infatuation and addictions is a little much. It's a little much at times, but it's pretty good.
You're not a chapstick enthusiast yourself?
Well, no. He has like an addiction to it. We actually had a doctor come on the show to talk to him about it. It wasn't a real doctor. I had a friend of mine who's a comedian pretend she was a doctor, and it was probably the greatest segment we've ever had. Struds was so rattled because she was just chirping him about it. So it was
what's his brand of choice? Is he a Burt's Bees guy or is he?
I don't know. You know what? It's that blue tub one.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's you're pretty deep. That's when you're looking for
real. Yeah, he's got like, you know, he's got two in his car and six at his house, and like it's embarrassing.
Just intervention time.
Yeah.
All right, Brendan, you want to start it off, buddy?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess just touching on the fact that Bell Let's Talk Day just passed yesterday, actually on Thursday, and that we're having you on here. I was kind of wanting to touch base because I saw that there's some pretty cool things on your show yesterday. One of them being that you had a really special guest, Dr. Grandma, come on. So in light of that, I was wondering if we could talk a little bit just about like how much of an inspiration Dr. Grandma or your mom has been in your life. And what kind of things have you taken away from her? And like what kind of... What has like her story helped you with in life? And if there's something that you could share with other people based on that, what might it be?
Yeah, well, it's funny. She has a Twitter account, but she doesn't really use it. She started that many years ago, but she's actually pretty good on social media. Pearl Greger is her name for it. She's written three books now. My mom is one of the most well-read, smart people I've ever met in my life. Like we still have our family farm that I grew up on, and I kind of joke that I'm a hired hand. I still run all the cows and everything out there. But so I get to visit with my mom a lot. And any conversation you have with mom, usually I might have to bring a notepad just because like she knows a lot of stuff about a lot of different things. And so, my mom did, she dealt with depression for a lot of years of her life. She's pretty open about it. She kind of, first time she had real nightmares when she was younger, and then it progressed and kind of got worse. And it turns out that she'd been, sexually abused when she was very young. She was pre-verbal as a toddler, so she couldn't really tell anyone. And then you kind of just hide that away in your subconscious, like a lot of people do. And so for her, I think a lot of that stemmed from it. Your body tries to tell you stuff that you don't know. And she finally figured all that stuff out when she was, I want to say, 39 or 40. And, that really changed everything for her. And for her, she says it healed her depression. She still deals with other things, but she's not depressed to the level that she was. And, she's not on any sort of drugs or anything like that anymore. And, as she always says, she goes, hey, if drugs have to get you through the day to start, that's a great thing. But eventually, they just mask the problem. You got to find other avenues. And so she did a lot of research for decades and on different things. And, she's done her PhD and, she's really into dream analysis and that's what she focuses on. So for me, like, I think it's hard for anybody. And I guess I can only speak for myself. Thankfully I've never had depression. You know, my mom has it. My sister's dealt with it a little bit from concussions playing rugby. And I've just learned that you just be empathetic about it, because it's sometimes if you just take it, you're just like, well, what do you mean? Cheer up. And that's such a, you know, it's kind of, it's an ignorant thing to say to anybody. So I've just learned that you be empathetic, you support it. And from my mom, like she wasn't going to let depression control her life. She worked really hard as a kid. I never knew she had it. Like looking back, even like her and my dad, they did a good job of kind of hiding that from her kids, I think. And, you know, obviously it never got too bad, but I've just learned that, you know what, you can, like for my mom, she just didn't want to accept that that was going to be for her life the whole way. And so she was able to kind of dig deep into her psyche and figured out what had happened to her as a young child. And, you know, then through that, it took a lot of years for her body to kind of release all those negative toxins that go with holding that in, because your body is an amazing thing. And what we have in our subconscious, a lot of times we don't even know until later. And a lot of it comes from real trauma. There are obviously some people, and science proves it, that you might just have, you know, you're not wired properly, unfortunately. And, you know, so they have different things that just you can't really explain per se. But in a lot of cases, it's real severe trauma sets people down that path because they block it away. And our society has kind of taught us to block those things away. And so I've learned with my mom, just, you know, you talk openly to people and encourage them. It, you know, if you are dealing with depression, to not let it control you. And if you want to try to heal it, there's always different ways to look at it.
I love that, man. I'm really appreciate you being so open and willing to share that, because it's a incredible story. But it's great. Your mom's definitely an inspiration to everyone that has their own battles and a lot of things. And I think there's a lot of really cool tools that you mentioned there that could really help people that are hurting, because I don't know that everyone really looks at it the same way. I think that a lot of these talks are getting a lot better and people are really realizing that this is something that needs to be spoken about. It's not something that we need to block out and tuck away and hide it in the back of our minds. But just the whole concept of what else is in your psyche and your subconscious that you're might not be aware of. I think that's something that maybe some people can realize, you know what, like there's not something wrong with me in terms of like personality. There's something wrong with me because of something that happened or something that in the way that I'm set up. So really, really cool.
We're having such a good convo about mental health. And I put out my own story on Twitter yesterday, which got quite a bit of love, but I'm let's jump into hockey, get into something a little more lighter.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is former Ottawa Senators Kyle Turris. It seems like he left his game back at Ottawa. He hasn't really been able to get back to the player he was when he played for Ottawa, even in Nashville. And honestly, when I heard Edmonton had signed Turris, I was really excited, because I honestly thought a new start for Kyle Turris. He was a fan favorite in Ottawa for all the years he was here. He was big in our community. Now, he's starting to get going a little bit more, but I'm thinking put him on the wing instead of as a centerman, as a veteran winger, bump him up a line with a guy like Dry. What do you think of Kyle Turris's game? What do you think you can do to maybe use him or utilize him as a veteran?
Well, you know what? They started out and, you know, James Neal wasn't healthy to start the season, and Cassian was on the top line, and, you know, Puljujärvi was there, and, you know, Puljujärvi hasn't been in the league a long time. And, you know, that line had they had some tough games, no question about it. Kyle Turris, if you just look at his goals for against, it's not good 5-on-5. But, you know, early numbers can really skew things. You have one or two bad games and things can really kind of go downhill. Like they kind of got crushed against Montreal. And some of those goals against that Turris has been on the ice for, he's had no impact on those goals against. Like the Oilers, unfortunately, have really gifted goals against this year. That's their biggest problem. They'll play really well for long stretches and then they just give up easy goals. The last two games since Neal, Turris and Cassian have been aligned together in Winnipeg, you know, they probably could have had three or four goals. Neal missed an open net, Cassian missed some great chances, and then their second game against Toronto, Cassian scored. So they're at least showing some positive signs to go there for him. I think when Gaetan Haas returns, there's a chance. Maybe he's the only other centerman they have who could play in the third line spot. Maybe. So Turris is there now, I think, out of necessity. If they want to move him to the wing, maybe that's something that happens in the future. But, you know, it's only been 9 games. In the first 7, he wasn't off to a great start. I don't think anyone could debate that. The last 2, he's been better. So I think Dave Tippett knows him. He's been patient. And you're right. Like, funny thing about Nashville, like how many guys' offense goes to Nashville and dies? Like, I don't understand it. Like, they've had a lot of good players that went there and just couldn't find it. They develop and produce great defensemen and goaltenders, but not so much high offense, even decent offensive guys. So, you know, I wonder how much confidence has to do with it a little bit. Like, he did score a great goal against Winnipeg. So, you know, maybe that gets his juices going. But that line, like James Neal had 6 shots and Cassian scored, like they were better. So I think you'll see a little bit more patience. But talk to me in maybe a week or two, kind of after they have those games against the Senators, because sadly right now for Sens fans, they're like Vancouver was terrible. They played Ottawa 3 in a row, and now they look like Stanley Cup champs because they outscored them 16-3, right? Even though they gave up a lot of shots. But, you know, so the Sens could be the tonic for a lot of teams and players to regain their confidence.
We're the little brother for everyone to beat up right now.
Yeah.
That's great. I like that point about Nashville. It is kind of crazy. We're seeing that a bit with Matt Duchene. It looks like he's doing a bit better now. But, yeah, and then even like Kevin Fiala when he came out of there last year, yep, kind of on a tear. And it was, I thought they lost that trade 100%. Granlund didn't look too great. So it's an interesting point. I guess – my question for you as an Edmonton fan, you hear a lot of people, a lot of hockey fans around the league who are going on are like, oh, like how many more years are they going to waste McDavid's talented prime, or how many years is this going to go on? And I guess my question for you is, when you look at McDavid and Draisaitl, you have two of the best, like two of the top 10, if not two of the top 5 forwards in NHL on the same team. Best player, in my opinion, in McDavid. What do you think Edmonton needs, or like, what do you think is missing that they haven't been able to push it to the next level where they're true contenders, going on a deep run, or even stringing together consistent years where they're making the playoffs? Like, what do you think is missing? Do you think it's a mindset thing? Is it like, do the players need to start playing a different way? Kind of like how Ovi started backchecking more. Like, what do you think it is?
Well, goals against, man. It's been a trend for a long time. And I know we're in an era of everybody wants everything fast. You're wearing a Nordiques toque. Go look at Joe Sakic's first 6 years in the NHL. 7. They were terrible, right? The Nordiques sucked. And Joe Sakic's become a Hall of Famer, right? But, like, they were beyond bad. Merrill Lemieux only made the playoffs once in his first 6 years. And those were in when there was 21 teams in the league, not 30. Right? Like, it was easier to make playoffs and they still couldn't do it. So like the orders were such a tire fire. And even when McDavid came in, you look at Peter Chiarelli. So you draft McDavid, and then at the same draft, you trade the 16th pick and the 32nd pick or third or whatever the pick was that year for Griffin freaking Reinhardt.
Yeah.
Who was at the time, not even a top pair guy in the American League. He was a second pair guy in the American League. Like that, they could have taken Kyle Connor. They could have taken Thomas Chabot. You could have taken Matt Barzal. Now, they probably wouldn't have taken Barzal because they had a lot of centers. So I get it. But you could have taken Kyle Connor. You could have taken Chabot, right? You could go down the list. You could have taken Brock Besser, any of those guys in the next 8 picks. Pick any of them. Erickson Ek would have been a better pick. So that's Konechny. That screwed him over. Then you throw in the Taylor Hall trade, right? Then you throw in the Eberle trade. So get rid of bad management would be the first step. And so they did. They brought in Ken Holland. It's only his second year. And, like, the Oilers were a playoff team. Like, they soiled the sheets in the bubble. It was embarrassing how bad they played against Chicago. And so I think, you know, recency bias or just that's what we see recent. And I get it. And I understand why Oiler fans are upset. They're sick of it. Like, they have seen more losing than any fan base for 2 decades. 2 decades, man. Like, they suck. So I get why they're frustrated. But, you know, ruining the years of McDavid, like you mentioned Ovi. Oh, yeah. How many times did Ovi get to the third round in his career until he won the cup? Oh, how about 0? Right. Yeah. So I think we get on narratives too quickly and to look at it. There's just because Crosby won right away, you know, Gretzky won soon. You know, Lemieux won in year 7. Awesome. Lindros never won. Right. Steve Yzerman was going to get traded how many times before he won? Right, to Ottawa. So there's no one wins one way. And now with 30 teams, like, there's going to be a lot of superstars that never win, right? Like, obviously you hope McDavid wins. He's got another 15 years of his career. So I think he'll have a chance to get better. But it comes down to the Oilers' defensive play. And, you know, this year they bungled their goaltending situation. So you bring in Forsberg, okay, and then you expose him to protect William Lagesson. How many of your Sens fans are like, who? Right? That is exactly it. William Lagesson, who's played one game for the Oilers. And when I asked Ken Holland why he didn't want a third goal, because I, and this is not hindsight 2020, I said this on my show the Friday before that the waiver wire was starting. I said, this is the year to protect three goalies because, you know, I thought Toronto would do it and they did for a brief time because the taxi squad, you have all your extra guys. You just bring them up and down. Once they clear waivers, it doesn't matter. And so they're like, well, we don't want to have a guy in the roster who doesn't play. Yeah, but that's what William Lagesson's doing. He's sitting on your roster and he's played one game. And so they didn't protect Forsberg. He got claimed. They could have then claimed Nedeljkovic from Carolina the next day if they wanted to, and then just traded the two of them because you can trade a guy within 30 days as long as you offer him to any of the other teams who put in a claim. Well, no one put in a claim on Nedeljkovic because he cleared. We know that. And no one else after Carolina would have claimed Forsberg. So you could have made that deal and protected yourself. And so, like, some of the decisions on the ice, like now Koskinen's getting run into the ground. He's a good goalie as long as he doesn't have to play 9 games in 16 days. He's not that good, right? Yeah. So I look at the Oilers, and when they reduce their goals against, their team will be fine. But and right now, they've just been gifting teams goals. Like, you can't give up an easy goal every game and expect to win.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. Like, I think it was – I can't remember where I heard it on. I think it was Bieksa said, he's like, if these guys don't get 2 points each every night, they're not going to win the game. Like McDavid at this point, like McDavid and Draisaitl both need to get at least 2 points in order for the Oilers to win, which I mean, they do on a lot of nights, but I thought that was interesting because yeah. And like, personally, I like their decor. So I was curious to see what you,
their decor, but it's the whole, it's everybody. You know, this year, like Adam Larson should be their most reliable defensive player, and he got off to a horrible start. Like the first game, he just makes two terrible reads, vacates the middle of the ice, and Bo Horvat's got a breakaway. Like, what are you doing? Like that, I get that you had no preseason, but still, you're like, these aren't guys who are in their first years, right? Like, and if you don't have good defense, and I think Ottawa can attest to that right now, if you don't have good defense, I don't care how good potentially your offensive guys are, you're going to get murdered when you got to play in your own zone all the time. And so I look at the Oilers. Their defense core is okay, but
you need Klefbom back.
He would help, sure, but I to me, he would help. There's no question about that. Like I'll say that for sure. But if your team can't be good because you lose a defenseman. Like, look at Boston. Pasternak's out. Chara's gone. Krug's gone. They've only got basically 5 forward scoring. They're still winning. You know why? Because they don't give up any goals. And so you've got to learn how to play team defense better in Edmonton. And that comes a commitment from the players to buy in. And that the coach can talk all he wants. He can come up with the greatest system ever. If the players aren't willing to do it. And that's the thing. This year, look at Draisaitl. Draisaitl, I think, is now 9-2 goals for, goals against, 5-on-5. So you can't tell me that he's not playing good defensively, right? And the other guys should follow. So it's just a matter of when they've made mistakes this year. Like last game, Mikko Koskinen behind the net, turns it over, they score. But that's not anybody else other than a bad play by Koskinen. Then Kyler Yamamoto, who's been actually pretty good this year, it's 3-3, he's on the boards, tons of time, shorthanded, doesn't get it out. 2 seconds later, Matthews wide open, goal. Cost you the game. So there's two goals you gifted. Larson, they had another game. He gifts 2 goals. That has been killing this team. So they'll go long stretches of 5-on-5. Like they've actually outshot Toronto 5-on-5 in every game they play this year. Every game. Right? And look at Toronto. Toronto, Edmonton actually has as many 5-on-5 goals as Toronto. So no one talks about Marner and Matthews having to score all these points because the difference is Edmonton gives. It's not that their supporting cast is crushing it. It needs to be better. But it's Edmonton's goals against. Until they change that, they're not winning.
So one of the things that I've seen a lot of social media, and I don't know if this is something you've seen. Like, Ottawa's got a lot of goalies. Like, right now, we have our own goalie issues to start the year. But down the system, Ottawa's got quite a few goalies sitting there. Like, have you heard anything about maybe the potential of, like, an Oilers-Ottawa trade going to dig in for one of these young goalies and kind of, you know, it might not be the ideal season or ideal situation to get a young goalie and, you know, go trade for, but
If you're the now, did any of these young goalies have like more than one season of AHL experience? Because when we look at guy like look at Matt Murray in Ottawa, Matt Murray still played 2 years in the AHL. He had a 931 and a 941 save percentage before he got called up. right? So he proved it there. Jordan Binnington was in the AHL for 5 years because everyone's like, well, what about Binnington? I'm like, yeah, what about him? He cleared waivers 3 different years. He was in the minors, wasn't very good. And then his last 2 years in the minors, he had 926 and 927 save percentage. So at least he showed numbers. He comes up, he has a great defense in front of him, and he's pretty good. So, you know, the guys – now I've covered the orders for so many years and I've seen the hope. Like at the start of the year, everybody was like, oh, Ottawa is going to be better. And I was like, what? Like, I don't want to be rude, but I'm like, okay. So they brought in Derek Stepan. He's a downgrade from Pajot, right? Like who was these really like, I would say, okay, Dadanov's an upgrade. Okay. I'll give you that. But when you start the season with 3 rookies in your top six, like, I'm sorry, dude. Like I've seen that movie in Edmonton. It doesn't end well. It's a horror movie. And that's kind of like what Ottawa is going to go through. And I feel bad for Sens fans because you get fed this hope like, oh yeah, Norris is going to help us. And Stützle, they're going to help you probably when they're 21 or 22. Like even Leon Draisaitl wasn't in the NHL at 18 because he had a late birthday. He was in the WHL. Then at 19, he played 37 games, had 2 goals, wasn't NHL ready. Went back, was an MVP at the Memorial Cup. Then he comes in at 20. And he's a different player, right? Connor McDavid, like, look at Jack Hughes. He was the number one overall pick. He shouldn't even be in the league last year. He wasn't ready. So, like, Stützle, I really question why you would play him this year. I don't think it, like, getting your ass handed to you all the time. Like, sure, he might learn from it, so maybe. But sometimes it's better to go develop in a lower league and maintain your confidence. This whole ideology that, oh, you gotta, you know what, you gotta challenge yourself against the best. Oh, really? And then lose your confidence? Name me a player who didn't benefit from dominating at a lower level over a guy who had to come in and get his teeth kicked in just so he could gain experience. Like,
Yakubov.
There's more guys that are better from dominating and coming into the NHL with confidence than there is guys who have to get their teeth kicked in for a few years.
I honestly think the reason why the Ottawa Senators brought Stützle right away, I think it was more of a for the ownership saving face, right? Oh, yeah. He's trying to gain the fans over again. He's trying to, you know, sell the jerseys and hey guys, look at me. This is what I'm doing for you guys. Look, yeah, we got this superstar, third overall pick. So you know, that's what I think it was. Honestly, if it was for any other reason, I think he'd be still playing at Mannheim right now.
But that to me is a, like, I've seen bad and bad leadership starts at the top and then comes down. And
we have a terrible ownership. We do.
Devil's advocate here, though. At the same time, like when you look at like UND and the amount of players that Ottawa like is developing, Shane Pinto, JBD. I mean, well, obviously Sanderson wasn't coming in this year, but like I do think like. At certain times, they haven't been rushing all their players. Where
and I'm not. I'm just using Stützle as an example of if he was the basis to help a team win. Like, no, name one competitive team in the NHL who has 3 rookies in their top six.
No,
it just doesn't happen, right? Even when they're great, like Evgeny Malkin, Ovechkin, they didn't come to the NHL till they were 20. Like Malkin was 2 years after his draft, and he was the second overall pick.
Well, it's funny you said that about the goalies as well, because like Shesterkin, for instance, like this year, obviously he didn't get off to the best start, but he was coming in. Everyone's like, oh, this kid, he's 25 years old.
Yes.
Like you said about Binnington. I remember watching him on Sound when I like going to OHL games and I was like, this guy's a stud. He's going to be unreal in the NHL. I'm like, just waiting years for him. He was a stud, but it took him a bit. Yeah. Like, and it's true, like goalies especially, like Matt Murray and Chesterkin are only a year off in age, which is blows my mind. But I mean, I think Stuart Skinner might be your answer there in a few years, depending on.
That's what they hope. Like the Oilers haven't drafted a goalie since Devan Dubnyk in 2004, who's come in and played of any sort of games. And you look at teams who win, what's the one consistent they've had? Look at the goal, like, well, outside of Boston, although Tuukka Rask got traded right away, he's kind of developed in their organization, right? Corey Crawford developed in Chicago. Vasilevsky developed in Tampa. Binnington's developed in St. Louis, late developer, but he was still developed there. Fleury and Murray, both from Pittsburgh. Holtby's been in Washington forever. Like it's, you know, I look at Edmonton and they've got Konovalov, they've got Rodrigue, and they've got Skinner. And they got to hope that in a few years, one of those three guys can play. Now, Stuart Skinner's only played 41 AHL games. He had an 892 save percentage. You know, is he, I don't know, sure, like they got to play a goalie at some point here, and it might be Grosnick, the veteran AHL guy who's got two NHL games, because at least he was goalie of the year in the AHL. He's had a lot of 920 save percentage seasons there. Like maybe he can be a guy. Like he might play Sunday against Ottawa. Like I think, I just can't see them continuing to run Koskinen unless they lose to Toronto. Then they might have to play him because they're like, God, we can't lose to Ottawa with a backup goalie. So it's amazing the situation Edmonton's put themselves in, and they have no one else but themselves to blame for because they didn't need to be here.
Yeah, no, definitely. It makes it tough, especially when you see like Calgary bringing in Markstrom and stuff like that. And
Edmonton tried, but they didn't. Edmonton made offers, but he chose Calgary. So, you know, I'll give them effort there for trying. But after that, you know, like even Smith and Forsberg was fine, but the Forsberg waivers, they just screwed themselves.
Yeah. No, I totally got that. It's tough, especially with an area need.
I wanted to ask you if Brady Tkachuk plays in the West, do you still think Matthew Tkachuk is the most hated Tkachuk in Edmonton?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if Brady's is I don't know if he's as cheap as his brother. And here's the thing. I want to make this abundantly clear. And I said this on my show last year. I was like, thank you, Matthew Tkachuk. Thank you. Because the Battle of Alberta got reinvigorated. Like he brought some life to it. Like I was in Maui last year at this time. And my mother and my mother-in-law were the ones who like that return game on January 29th. You know, I'm on a beach. And when I go on holidays, I try not to worry about sports. And they're like, hey, do you think we can get the game? And I'm like, what game? Well, Edmonton Calgary, and I'm like, these are my 70-year-old mother and mother-in-law. They were so fired up because everyone's like, what's going to happen? Like, I'm like, that's how it used to be in the 80s. And, yeah. You know, the Nordiques and the Habs and the Leafs and the Senators in the early 2000s, like that was a great rivalry. So, you know, if he was out here, it would be hard pressed to be more of a jerk. And I say that, mm-hmm. like, it's good to have villains, right? And so, you know what, he's, like, I think if Brody had more skill around him, I think he might be more skilled than Matthew a little bit. Like, he's bigger, he's stronger. I think he's probably tougher. But Matt right now is just a better shit disturber, right? Like, just the little things he does, like, just irritates people. And like, he's a great villain because other fan bases can't stand him. And that's good for the game. We need more of that. So, like, I hope that Tkachuk comes into Edmonton and spears someone or cross-checks someone, and there's got some animosity because the game needs more of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, we were talking to Darcy Tucker just a few weeks ago, and one of the things he was saying was how he loves the Battle of Alberta now, right? And hockey a lot is a lot of setups nowadays, right? It's stage fighting, and he's not a fan of that. And really hoping that Brady Tkachuk doesn't care how close Austin Matthews is with the Tkachuk family, because everyone knows they're really close, but he doesn't give a crap and he's just going to go at it with everybody and run Austin Matthews. That was kind of the hope we had, but in the first couple games, we didn't say any of that. And we were really hoping that right out of the gates, that rivalry was going to come back and be like, hey, we're playing each other 9 times. Let's start this right now. But we didn't get that. With Calgary and Edmonton, I love it because I go to Calgary and Edmonton games. I go to an Edmonton game. It doesn't matter who they're playing. There's still always going to be somebody wearing the Matthew Tkachuk turtling t-shirt. Or there's the guy who's dressed in an entire turtle suit in the middle of the floor at Rogers Arena, just, you know, turtled up. And you always see it. And that's what we need. That's the rivalries where it's fun.
I'm with you, man. Like, I hope it happens. And I think – and rivalries, you know, they start in the regular season for sure. And they're also better when both teams are competitive, right? So, as Ottawa – and I like a lot of their pieces – you need to have good veterans, like not just good person that helps to have good people, but you need to have veterans who can play. And that's something that they're going to have to look like. I would have overpaid Pageau a little bit just because I know he's a good player. And, you know, you overpay him because Senators weren't going to compete for the next 2 or 3 years, realistically. But if he helps them get better by the final few years of his contract, you can still live with it if he's $1 million overpaid, because the value to allow the other guys, you know, the Bathursons and Norris and all those other guys to be better, that will help you down the road. And that's the mistake Edmonton made. Was Edmonton, when they had all their years of bad and they had Hall and Eberle and, you know, Pajarvi and then Yakupov. Well, they got rid of what I called their second tier guys. They had older guys like Horkoff and Smith. But they had Stoll and Torres and Matt Green, who are good character. They weren't great players, but good character guys. And look at Green and Stoll. They were huge parts of those teams in LA for what they brought in the room and competitiveness on the ice. And plus, you know, they were kind of the go-between age group to have a connect with your 18 and 20 and 21-year-old guys. And Edmonton really screwed that up. And now Draisaitl and McDavid are kind of the middle-aged guys, you know, 24 years of age with a lot of experience. So that's when I watch Ottawa now, and that's why at the start of the year I was like, I really sorry. Like everyone's coming to my show and they're like, Gregor, what are you talking about? Like Ottawa's way more improved. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, guys. Like, I don't see them winning 15 games. Like, I hate to say that, but they're just, the moves they made were just across the board, even one guy in, one guy out. And I'm not sure it was a big enough improvement because they got rid of, like, I get why Borowetsky, he was probably like, I got to get rid of the owner. Like after that between two ferns, like interview that he had to do, like, my God. But so I think that hurt them a little.
Well, we had him on the show. He actually said that was a very uncomfortable and forced interview.
Oh.
We talked to him after he was traded to Nashville, and he goes, that was the most awkward thing ever.
Oh, honey, like everybody could see that, right? Yeah. I'm like, what? You might as well sit down and have to go on FaceTime with your ex and be like, yeah, so how are you doing? Like, come on. It's brutal.
Brandon, you got the last question teed up?
Oh, I didn't know if we were running out of time with Greg's here. I'll ask you this. So going back on the famous one for one that Oilers fans love getting roasted on, we'll go with this. In hindsight now, how do you feel about that trade? And do you think that Edmonton could keep Taylor Hall with all the other players that they have if they were to hold on to him?
100%. Like the day that trade was made, I was on my show and I was just ripping. I don't know if I'd ever been like, I was just like, what a joke. That was such a terrible trade. Like
I was listening awful, to you that day.
Awful trade. And people were like, oh no. Cause people like eventually what happens is you're so desperate for hope that you'll find somebody to blame. Right. They would come up with these ludicrous reasons of, oh yeah. You know, like people forget Connor McDavid lived with Taylor Hall the first year. Right. Taylor Hall would actually go to the bar because he was kind of done going to the bar. He would go to the bar, pick up McDavid to ensure nothing happened. Right. But that doesn't get, they're like, oh, and they're like, well, Hall and McDavid didn't have success. They played two games together. But the best part was Hall could drive a line with Draisaitl. McDavid could have another line. And yeah, that was, and it's not that, you know, like Adam Larson at least was an NHL player. Right. He's still an NHL player. The Griffin Reinhart trade was the worst because I got nothing. We had two high picks that would have turned out to be something. Definitely one of them would have been really good. But that Hall trade, easily you could have kept him because he was a $6 million player. He was a $6 million player when he won the Hart Trophy. Right. Like that. That up until this year, you wouldn't have had to re-sign him. And you, Matt, you just think if the Oilers just would have done that summer, they wouldn't have acquired Milan Lucic. Right.
Yeah,
you could have kept Hall and signed Jason Demers, and it would have cost you basically the exact same money that you had Lucic and Larson for. Like, it's not even close how much better the Oilers would have been long term with that. And like Eberle was one that you probably would have had to lose just because Eberle's not as good as Nugent Hopkins and Hall in different position at the time than Nugent Hopkins. But it's mind-blowing how bad that trade was this many years ago. And what's even more mind-blowing is how some people will actually think that it was a good trade for the Oilers. Like some wonder, oh, yeah, but they made the playoffs in 2017. I'm like, yeah, that's one year, right? So you think if Hall was there, they wouldn't have made the playoffs? Like, give me a break.
It's funny. I'm happy that you said that because when I was watching Draisaitl come up, like his that first full year that he had in Edmonton, when he was on that line with Hall, I was like, holy, like the two of them together were incredible.
And Draisaitl talked about is like Taylor Hall carried that line. He was the driver of that line at the time, which allowed Draisaitl to just come in and develop. So imagine if they would have kept that going. Right? Like, imagine what would have happened. You would have had now Draisaitl and McDavid would still be dominant on the power play. And maybe they played Draisaitl, Hall, and McDavid the odd shift here or there late in the game. Great. But you would have had two really dominant lines, right? And Nugent Hopkins might have been the one eventually that got traded because you didn't need him as a third line center, right? So you either move him to the wing, which is fine too. And you could have done that. So, like, it's such like the most, if I was an Oilers fan, the thing that would piss me off the most is how they ruined, they after all the years of suck, in a span of 12 months, they ruined what could have been a great team because of just dumb trades. And like, so when you trade Eberle for Strom, and then they traded Ryan Strom when he was actually playing really well as a center iceman, the third center iceman they needed, he never would have put up the numbers. So in Edmonton, in New York, because he wouldn't have played in the top six because you had Draisaitl and McDavid, which is fine. But he just, they traded him after 18 games because their line had one goal. Even though they were killing everybody in shot attempts, they couldn't score in the ocean. Like, you would have given him $100 in a brothel, they weren't scoring. But all of a sudden, you know, because things, any outlier, positive or negative, eventually comes back to the middle, right? And so they traded him for Spooner. Like, what the? And then even the Drake Caggiula trade for Brandon Manning. Like, are you kidding me? Like, it was embarrassing.
He was the one that hit, had that, like, intentionally.
McDavid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was the trades that Chiarelli made. Like, hey, he made some good ones. The Cassian for Scriven's good trade for them. The Maroon trade was a great trade for them. But the big trades that crushed them were just Griffin Reinhart, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Strom. Like, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And now they're kind of rebuilding from that again, which is embarrassing.
I just can't believe that they didn't fire him a long time ago. Well, honestly, you talk to Oiler fans and you're like, okay, the shoe's going to drop. No, okay, the shoe didn't drop. Okay, now the shoe's going to drop. That was really stupid, Chiarelli. You're going to get fired today. Nope, you didn't get fired today.
If it makes you feel any better, at least you didn't have Cody Ceci instead of Adam Larson, because apparently that trade was in the works before. $6 million.
Not having this. I never put by anything on Chiarelli at that point. So, you know, and then some people think he should be up for the job in Pittsburgh. Like, are you serious? Like, you know what? Hey, he obviously had great success in Boston. I give him credit for that. He built Boston's blue line. There's no one can argue that. He did a really good job of building that team. But since 2013, he's been a tire fire as a GM. You can't argue it. The Sagan trade in Boston, the Hall trades, the Reinhart trades. You know, if you want to keep him as a scout, great. But if he's running your organization, you're going nowhere.
They give enough. And Sagan, I think, like in his tenure. So I do wonder to you sometimes, but they woke up and they've been competitive. So,
well, Gregor, honestly, you've been on longer than I thought you would be, and you've been amusing. You've been informative. You've been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us, man. Honestly, it's been a lot of fun. The stories are always great. I love that you censored yourself without dropping an F-bomb, but you didn't censor what you had to say. So I appreciate that. And, to our viewers, don't forget to like this video and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And again, Gregor, appreciate your time, man. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy the games.
Thanks, you too. Thanks for coming as well.